to the No BS Short-Term Rental Podcast, an unfiltered look into the global vacation and short-term rental industry.
I'm Mateo Bradford.
And I'm John Stokinger.
And this is our podcast. We bring the right people to the table at the right time, giving you an inside view and take on the short-term rental industry like no other podcast can.
This is live from Vermont, No BS Short-Term Rental Podcast with Mateo. Good. Normally I'm saying good morning, but good afternoon.
Yes, sir. It is 3:55
in San Antonio, and we have someone special with us today.
We do.
We're going to just dive right into it because we're short on time. We want to make sure we put an amazing episode out. We have, and I'll let you introduce because it's your thing. You like giving the introductions.
Do I?
You're a little long-winded sometimes with them, but I like it. So I'm just calling you out a little bit, but it's all good.
Long-winded with the introductions. Christina Ashley Williams.
Hello, friends.
I'm joking. So I don't care. I am long-winded. It's me. I own it, and I'm okay with that. So we are blessed to have the amazing Christina Ashley Williams of Unpacking and Baldwin and Simone, of which I'm sure a lot of you are like, what is that? Well, guess what? You're about to learn. It's not going to come from me. It's going to come from her. I will say this. She is a rising star in the DEI and alternative hospitality boutique hotels place. Had the fortune of meeting through a common friend, Andrew McConnell. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Andrew. Thanks for making that introduction. And after meeting Christina and talking, we immediately kind of clicked. And I was like, hey, we need you in this space. Would love to have you come to VRMA and run a workshop on DEI. John and I have been working on it, as everyone knows. And it was great to just connect and bring you in and actually have you come and run this workshop that I'm going to let you tell all about.
Yeah. First of all, just kudos to y'all for taking the initiative to make sure that these things were prioritized in this space, to create something out of nothing, or like to have like a trailblazer and say, hey, something is necessary when other people may not be prioritizing it is huge. So good job. Yeah,
thank you.
Praise to y'all. You're doing the work.
Well, I got to give a shout out to John, because honestly, and I feel like I've said this multiple times today, but all of this momentum that we're seeing in the DEI space that we're doing, just in VRMA and here, came from a conversation that John started. Mm. So John actually reached out to me about a conversation, and it was, so kudos where kudos is due. I don't want to take credit for, John started this. We've worked together.
No.
It's okay. You can take credit. It's cool. Look, it's good.
I asked a question, and the question should have been asked a long time ago by other people.
Facts. I agree.
So it is what it is, but we're here today, and I guess thank you. But it's not really, ultimately, we're making progress.
Yeah.
And so that's, and it was great.
It takes a village, right? Like, yeah, there's a four there to be a move of a needle, the spectrum. Yeah. Like, there's, it definitely takes a community to make it happen.
We've made some, it was first VRMA, we had two DEI things.
Right.
Not only did we didn't even, like, we had any,
right,
but we went from zero to two things. Right. And can it be worked on? Yes. Nah. Remember, if you're listening, we could do better.
Yeah.
And we will do better. And Mateo being the co-chair of the subcommittee, obviously helps, and we're making baby steps. But tell us about, tell us what your thoughts on Burma.
Yeah.
What you've gotten taken out. Tell us about that workshop. Tell us about your background. What got you into all this?
Yeah, let's start there.
Okay. Background.
Where you come
first
from?
All right. Yeah. So, hi. All right. So I have an interesting background. It's kind of like a hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
I started off in education. I went to school originally, got my master's in teaching social science, where I concentrated in critical race studies. After spending about 13 years in the field, working in different Black and brown neighborhoods across the country, I was finding that there was a whole other world out there that I just wasn't familiar with when it came to technology and understanding business. Mm-hmm. And so I took a risk on myself. I actually had gotten into a doctoral program, and I quit that shit and was like, I am going to go back to school and actually learn tech. And so what I found in my program was my heart was really aligned with design. Mm-hmm. And so because my concentrations in my work prior had been really focused on human impact, social emotional development, critical race studies, all of that jazz. It's a lot of just like how are people interacting with each other, and you know, I found that within this technology business space, human-centered design was my thing. Because now we were talking about, cool, how are we building products and services with people in mind? Right. And like, I'm a people person. That's my, you know, that's my stitch. And so I recognized I had this unique opportunity to kind of bridge academic-y stuff into language that actually makes sense within the business space. And so I found myself with a real pull on my heart, actually, after the murder of George Floyd last year. So as we were in the midst of this global uprising and we're being bombarded on our media by all of these articles around how to be an anti-racist, and we're seeing all these corporations making public statements about standing in solidarity with Black Lives Matter. Meanwhile, their internal employees are like, no, you don't.
Right.
I really felt that, you know, like my own experiences with racism and sexism at work, at school, at the grocery store was very real. And so when I was in the midst of my own observation, just like what was going on in society, I was like, yo, like I can do something about it. I'm in a really unique position where I understand what's happening from a historical and academic standpoint, and also from a lived experience standpoint. And I also, like, I know how to speak the language of the business sector. And so,
and the education sector.
You and the education sector. Kind of right. And so that that gave me this push to launch Unpacking. And also it was just really awesome double entendre to have. So Unpacking, what is it? Unpacking is an online learning and certifications platform for diversity, equity, inclusion. We specialize in social impact areas. Typically, when you look at DEI trainings or programs, et cetera, they kind of lump everything together. And so what we did at Unpacking was recognize six core areas that were independently of value that people should focus on one at a time and then scale their learning to the next thing once one is completed. And so at Unpacking, you range from our programs and certifications in anti-racism to LGBTQ rights, then gender rights, disability rights. We also have sustainability and product inclusion. Obviously, the climate over this past 2 years, anti-racism has been the program we've been really pushing. And it's amazing just to see the growth of what we've been able to impact across different industries. You know, like organizational culture is something that is relevant to any organization. And so we found this really beautiful opportunity to help people kind of just find like a disarming way to engage in these conversations and feel less of the fragility, less of the fear, less of the uncomfortability to even start. And yeah, like I'm really, really proud of what we've been able to build and have continuing to scale the program throughout different organizations like Burma now.
No, that's awesome. Tell us your, so we, Mateo reached out to you and you came, and tell us about that workshop. I mean, what was your thoughts on it? You know, I mean, my first initial thoughts are like, damn, more people should be here. Like we, and more were registered. And so I'm not sure what the story is. Do you register and then did you forget, or did you register because in, you know, maybe this is like, oh, this would be cool if I can possibly get there. So, you know, my, I have some personal feelings on the timing of the, you know, I don't know, you know, we'll have to rethink of that for another year here, but you know, tell us about your thoughts of, you know, how it went down.
So the content of the session I thought was really great, right? Everyone was participatory. Everyone was super engaged. And they showed up and they were active, right? Like people were there and they weren't just sitting on their phones or disengaged. They were equal contributors to the conversation, to the activities that we were doing. And we ended up creating actual like definitive measurable goals and action steps that people were able to move forward with.
Yeah.
What I also really loved is the debrief discussions after the activity. So in some of the prompts, such as reviewing different vocabulary, just to get on the same page about what is the difference between race and ethnicity, right?
And I did, you know, full disclaimer, I didn't get them all right, you know, and that's good.
That's good. It is good. Yeah. And you know what? It's even in the design, right? So like within the facilitation, I intentionally start off with that activity to lay groundwork, because a lot of times people think that they know more than they know when they enter the space, and it humbles everyone.
Yeah.
And it also helps people kind of get on this like level playing ground. Mm-hmm. So then when we debrief together, you see like, oh, I wasn't the only one that couldn't necessarily match that to that.
Yeah.
And it's again, the disarming component. And then going into activities around shared experiences there, it's interesting. So I was just tagged in a post on Twitter yesterday around, someone complaining that their organization was going to facilitate one of those like walks of privilege activities, like, you know, take a step forward if you've lived in poverty before, and she was like, no, I don't want to do this. Yeah, I shouldn't be mandated to participate in things like this, right? And so I was reflecting back on like, dang, like I'm so thankful that I've been able to actually like apply learnings from my time in doing this work and understanding like what is actually causing harm and what is creating learning opportunities that still get that same point across. Like what their intention is, okay, we get it, but who's actually benefiting it?
Yeah.
Who's being harmed at the end?
Yeah.
So anyways, like in our experiential sharing like with our activities, we're able to see like, dang, some people will interpret some questions one way and others will interpret it other ways. A great example of this from yesterday, from the workshop was, does your American identity bring you more safety or privilege outside of America than it does living here?
Right.
And one person responded, yeah, I don't like how Europeans treat me as American. I feel like I've treated as like I am less than, right? And then you also see someone in a Black body that says, but by me saying I'm American in another country, I actually receive more privilege than I do within the United States. You want to touch on that?
No, I was just saying, that was
it's very real, right?
Yeah, it's very real. And it's been historically real.
If you
look at the African American experience in terms of people, you look at soldiers who came home from World War II and were like, I fought here.
We see Red Summer in Chicago. Yep, absolutely. Like, I got to like, you know, family. I know. No, absolutely. And then other components too, right? Around like just a trivial experience you're not even thinking about, just like taking a shower at the hotel room. Are there products that are designed for curly hair textures that are standardized within those spaces?
Right.
How often are you thinking about that unless that's your actual lived experience?
I've never thought of it until yesterday. Yeah. And, you know, it kind of blew my mind just even think about like, oh, like what an oversight, you know, what an absolute oversight, you know, in the importance of just being inclusive in your offerings.
Yep.
And I get it. If I put myself as a property manager or a hotel owner or something like that, you know, maybe you don't have to have, but have it available.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like make, you know, even a sign that's like, if, you know, if you're looking for A, B, and C,
a menu option,
ask for, this is what's on the pumps on the shower wall. You know, this is your standard, but if you need this
or need something else, need some cocoa butter.
Legit.
We were just having that conversation. Cause actually John brought it up in the panel that we were just on.
Yeah.
Like people don't think about that. So it's like bringing that awareness to this, like that's the work we're doing in DEI in this industry because it just hasn't been thought of before. And even if they thought about it, how do you execute?
How are you executing? Because also too, it's like, what's your network look like to actually be able to tap into sourcing those sorts of products and services if it hasn't been your reality.
Right. I mean, financially, it might not make sense for you to have cocoa butter and normal lotion and you know, special shampoo that's you know better for curly hair or just normal straight to oily hair, you know, whatever, you know. But have it available.
Yeah.
And I think that it's in, you know, the woman that was there in the presentation, she's like, she goes, I have no idea what I would do if I ever actually saw that. She said, I'd probably cry.
Yeah. She's like,
I'd probably cry. Like just be so relieved to see that. And, you know, I think that the huge takeaway from both, you know, your presentation, which was made, and keep in mind, folks, this was 3 hours. Yeah. This wasn't like a small, like everyone.
Question, did it feel like 3 hours?
No, it didn't. It was good.
Strategic design, y'all.
No, but I mean, the people that came were immersed and were there because they wanted to be there. It wasn't like a quick 45-minute, like.
Yeah, like the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, like it was like, no, like.
We're working through some things. We're going to
figure some shit out. Yeah. And then
and it's
today,
collaborative. Yeah. You're building knowledge by interacting with your peers and exchanging
Even
knowledge.
Even today's presentation was supposed to be 45 minutes. It went an hour and 10.
Of course, we're getting cut.
They were like in the back. No. cut the mics. But the conversations were great. The conversations were great, and it actually reverberates.
People want to talk about the stuff.
But this is how I know it was good, because there were people in there, you know, that weren't there on Sunday at our boot camp that actually got some of the material because of people who were there and were there today as well. Yeah. And it was like these, and again, learning the key that this is hospitality. The one I'm saying, like, if you would have had something that reflected that you thought of me, that's hospitality.
Yeah. Yes.
That is the core of what hospitality is. That's what people who do it the right way, right?
Like, and kind of the segue, I mean, like, this is why I'm building Baldwin and Simone's.
There we go.
Like, right. I know what it is like to travel while Black. I know that it's a different experience.
Right, here's my experience.
And so I have a mission now to curate an experience for travelers of color within a hotel space that lets them see effortlessly that they were thought about.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Imagine going into a place and being able to check in without fear of the cops being called on you, or going into the bathroom and having products that actually reflect your needs, such as catering to your curly hair textures or using richer butter, such as shea or cocoa, as standard within the lotions that are offered, right? Or thinking about the art that is on the wall when you're walking around the premises, or what languages are spoken.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how many different experiences that are either microaggressions or just straight up trauma just from the airport to get to the hotel itself, from being profiled in the airport and being pulled over and asked if you, like randomly selected,
pulled out of line,
To getting in the car, not knowing if it's the safest place for you to be in your skin.
Right.
People making assumptions or stereotyping. This happens a lot for women of color. If you are a sex worker, right? There are so many different experiences, even just showing up to the premises and people assuming that you do not belong to be there,
right?
Or that you are a worker on the premises.
The help, right?
You're the help, right? So like there's so much that has to be navigated on vacation.
Right.
For a time of leisure, it's not just cool. I'm in my bathing suit and towel and like whatever. It's all of this extra layer that unfortunately doesn't escape just from going to another country.
Right.
And that's why within the hospitality space, I'm so excited to be doing this work, both as a diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant, but also as a rising hotelier myself, right? It just makes so much sense. Like if we're going to build standards and structures around this equitable experience, the travel industry is like the biggest no-brainer, because you're interacting with so many cross-cultural experiences on a daily basis. It seems like here there's, I feel like the work that's done here can give huge ripple effects into other industries by nature.
Can you share with us and the audience, and you know, Mateo too, you know, if you don't mind, what's like some of these experiences you've had traveling that are like absolutely like were like either so ignorant or like so like demoralizing?
Oh my God.
Like, is there anything that you could share with the audience that like, to, you know, maybe enlighten the, like walking in your shoes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just got back from a 3-week trip from Europe a couple days ago. And even on that trip, like I know we were in Italy and we're walking out of this. We've already went through the security check. We're like walking to go through the sliding doors. And one of their police officers comes running over to us to interrogate us, my friend and I, who's a black woman, to ask us like, wait, what are you doing here? Like, how much money do you have on you? This wasn't like a stop. It wasn't like we were at like a customs check. Right. It wasn't anything. Everyone else was just walking through. We just, and the words were used, you are randomly selected, meaning I randomly decided to come and talk to you. Mm-hmm. And that's just the term that we're using. It's kind of like my thing about with stop and frisk.
Yeah.
What was very going on similar. In New York, you know?
Very similar.
That experience, I was at Art Basel in Miami and I was sitting in an exhibition hall getting right, waiting for the talk to start. And I'm dressed up. It's Art Basel, right? So like people are looking fly. They're in their dresses. They got their fashions out, like flexing on everybody. As was I. This man came up to me and started asking me questions as if I worked there. Mm-hmm. And I had my curly hair out this day. Mm-hmm. And once I explained to him that, one, I am not an employee. Obviously, everyone that is an employee is dressed in black, as you can see around us right now. Right. I'm in a big, colorful dress.
Right.
He then shifted the conversation to, wow, I love your hair, and starts grabbing my hair. Not just like touching it or petting it, like grabbing my hair as if I am a zoo animal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's no conscious block in his mind that says, I should not do this. There's no conditioning that says, hey, this is not appropriate.
Right.
The conditioning is this person of color is not internalized as human in my processing right now. Like that's what a normalized experience is for me as a black woman, whether I'm in the United States or I'm traveling abroad. The hair thing comes up a lot. Mm-hmm.
And those that aren't watching, you know, you have a lot of hair.
I have a lot of hair. But it's, this is weave. This right, is, yeah. Right. yeah. These are extensions.
But you know, when your curls out, I mean, but what, it's still, it's what you're portraying. It's what you're showing. It's
my natural,
it's,
yeah.
Well, and there's also the fetish, there's this fetish, fetishization of black women's hair and, right. and lack of boundaries. Mm. Whereas, and I think the-
When do you just go touch people's bodies?
Well, but it's the same way as in when, and to kind of, you know, let people, making it like equate it to something. It's like the way that pregnant women don't like their stomachs.
Yes.
And I thought that was a great comparison. That's we talked about comparison. That the other day. It was like, think about it. It's like, you know, don't just run up and touch my stomach
or don't
invade my, you do not respect my space enough to, you know, ask for permission to come into it. Right. Like it's, now it's interesting because I've seen that a lot in certain cultures. They just don't care. Like at the end of the day, they don't even think about it in that realm.
Right.
But this also happens in the U.S. a lot. And that's where it happens a lot because no one, if someone was to do that to them, they would be like, why are you touching me?
Why are you touching me?
But to them, it's like, oh, let me see this. And I, not the hair for me, but it's always been skin. It's like, oh, your skin is so cafe au lait. Or it's always like, oh, and you're like, and again, look, I grew up in Portland. I'm used to being the one of only or less in this space. I think I move a little bit differently, but it doesn't change the fact that just because I've grown to be used to it and I've learned to not upset myself with it and not take it on. It
doesn't mean it's right. That is
but that's the point. But like, and again, like I've learned to not burden myself with that because I'm not going to get upset because of your ignorance, right? You're not going to mess my day up. So if, whether you think I'm the help, whether you're following me through a store, whether you're stopping me at the passport line, whether it's any of that, I've had, because that's not my natural inclination. I take off. Like I'm slow to anger, but it, when it gets to a certain point, I don't want to go there. And, but at the end of the day, I end up losing too at the end of the day.
That's true.
More often than not.
There's also this burden of who gets to even be angry and who gets to respond in an upset manner.
Yeah.
Because within the Black community, for example, if an interpersonal harm is done, so a one-off that's like on a micro scale, so someone did something to me in my world, if I am upset about it, I don't get to be upset just as Christina. I am now representing all Black people, and I am now a stereotype for my entire community in my response.
And your gender.
And my gender. Right, yeah.
Man, she's hot, angry Black woman, right?
Yeah, it's like it becomes this this trope. And so then it goes, that also goes back to like the dehumanization of the Black body, the Black female body, et cetera. Because we can't even live in our full expansion of our emotions and our full truth, because there are certain, limits that society puts on like what we are allowed to do and present. Lots of things.
Speaking of angry Black women, so we don't bullshit here. So, you know, we talk about the news, we talk about the things that happen. And this is right in line with, you know, what we were talking about yesterday, right? In terms of you do something in a certain space that you're qualified to do and speak on, right? Somebody at this table went viral yesterday. Somebody on this, somebody at this table had a rant about something that happened yesterday and was like, it's ridiculous. But after everything we've kind of been going through, it's interesting because we just ran a panel talking about, you know, DEI a year after George Floyd. What's changed, right? What's changed in terms of, you know, society? What's changed in terms of economic opportunity? What changed in terms of, you know, what's going on? And so we're sitting at a table with a, so, you know, talking to a Black woman who is in the space, a founder and a CEO, she went viral. I'm gonna let her tell her why. I'm gonna let her say why she went viral.
So what I spoke about was a reflection on a Forbes article that shared that a company by the name of Canvas that is owned by two white men, and it is a diversity recruitment platform, just raised $50 million $50 million for their diversity recruitment platform. And in the article, one of the founders stated that he was qualified to run a diversity platform because he's, quote, been to jail before and has Black nieces and nephews. Those were his qualifications. Meanwhile, meanwhile, we have folk like myself who have two master's degrees, has spent over the last 15 years in culturally immersive environments, teaching, working, studying, doing this work. And in this past year and a half of my fundraising, I have heard there's no market for it. DEI is just a moment. It's not a mandate for the future. All these imaginative ways of saying, no, we are not going to give you money because we do not believe in you. We do not believe in this market. We do not believe that this is something that is important and needs money, right? Yet all of a sudden, when they look like that, the money appears. And so I went viral yesterday because I gave these reflections, and I posted on LinkedIn, and people were like, yeah, this is fucked up. Like, this is fucked up. And so, I'm definitely contemplating now. I'm like, I just may end up doing an equity crowdfunding campaign and create our platform that is community driven for the community, and make sure that instead of putting the money in the hands of VCs that may not recognize the value that we're trying to do in just creating a more equitable society, put the ownership of the company and the people whose hearts are actually like here and are committed to making this change. Like, if people have ownership in the company and we continue to grow, I would love for it to just be community distributed funds that way.
It's so, how much money?
50 million.
50 million.
Bringing that back to a year later. Yeah. Remember all the pledges and support to support Black founders, Black women, Black businesses to put the equity, because when we're talking about diversity and inclusion, we're not just talking about being at the table. So it's not, it's the whole, you know, being invited to the dance and then, you know, being asked to dance scenario. You know, there was a lot of momentum coming out of that, right? And it would be interesting. Somebody's got to do a follow-up to see.
Sherelle Dorsey did a report for TP Insights on the data of, like, this is who said what. This is where they're at. Now, you can subscribe.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
It's, you can subscribe.
Somebody needs to publish that. Like, we need us. Like, when these things happen, I think that's the accountability part falls flat.
Data. Do you have that data available?
Yeah, Sherelle Dorsey.
Okay. I'd love to go ahead and share a link to that on all your stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the podcast, we'll go ahead and share a link to that data as well on here. So let's make sure that I connect.
Yes. Before it.
This is, I mean, it's fucked up.
John has to hear. John has to hear our founder stories. Anthony and I's horror stories of the BC meetings shit that people tell us all the time.
They'll tell them right to their face. Basically, hey, we like your idea, but since we don't, basically, you know, we're not like you. Mm-hmm. We don't, you know, I don't know if we can see eye to eye.
Yeah,
shit like that. I'm like, really? Like, but they'll still get money.
I like you a lot. I really like you as a founder.
Yeah.
Okay. Cut the check. What? Cut the check.
Well, y'all know what my cut the check story is. So that's my whole point. But I think that kind of, I want to read that study. I really feel like that is what is going to keep the momentum going, because
accountability.
The accountability has to happen. All right. Everyone, I love the spreadsheet that people were passing around, and a lot of good things happened. Like, I don't want to say nothing good happened in this past year, but there was a lot of shit that was talked, and there was a lot of promises that were made, and there was not a lot of money spent.
Right.
How do you reconcile that? Right.
It's hard. Like, okay, go back to I think if we take out, if there was action and I like what Mateo always said, if you actually you live it and you put some, and if this cat, if he, whatever those co-founders said, you know, if he didn't come out and say that, and he was actually, he puts together a diverse team, it's a different story.
It's funny because if you look at their website, all of their, you know how positions, it's typically just you've got the executive team.
Yeah, and you got your C-level.
On their website, it's all mixed up.
Yeah.
Because they know, if they actually have who the leaders are, at the top, it's going to be homogenous.
But that's bullshit, though. Let's be very clear. That's bullshit. Because at the end of the day, if you were really about
that life,
you would have never made those statements at all. No, that would have never come out.
That would have never come out of your mouth.
You would have been like
jail. I think he also stated it because he had never gone to college.
And he said
he also understood.
But again, I don't know this person. I don't know this person from Adam, right? Right. I don't know this person at all. But I know professionals in the space that aren't people of color that are very great thought leaders and have produced a tremendous amount of materials and are helping as allies in this space. The issue I have when she told me the story, it wouldn't have been about what made you qualify. Would have been that my ability of a leader to get the right people in the room, to get the right stories to the table, to make my tech platform be effective in that space.
That would have been a different story. It's still not the best story, but it would have been a different story.
But that's the difference between that. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Someone who's qualified within that role would have been able to. Exactly.
That's a very good point.
So anyway, I thought that was funny because we were coming out and Sasha was I went viral. And I was like, oh.
Is that a good thing?
We'll go ahead and share a link to that post as well.
Absolutely. It's a good one.
Haven't seen it yet, so I'm excited to see it.
It's a goodie.
It's well done. It's articulated. She didn't talk bad about their mamas and nothing else and make them feel bad.
It's a critique of the VC world. Yeah. And low-key, someone else got this work because someone made a comment that was just asking for it. And so I made it a teachable moment and brought out all the statistics and the definitions of vocabulary that he was misusing in his critique of my post. So that also became an educational opportunity more folks to engage.
Well, and again,
and then directed them to our resources page on our website, which further dives into the data and the vocabulary. If you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready.
Well, hence the need for Baldwin and Simone, which you got to tell people what that is. Most people in our space, some of us will get it, some of us won't. So tell them, the story behind it's important. You got to give the genesis.
Thank you. So, okay. So Baldwin Simone's, it's an experiential hotel designed for travelers of color. Mm-hmm. James Baldwin and Simone, Nina Simone, was my inspiration for this space because I was thinking about the lived experiences of James Baldwin as a Black man in America and him leaving the United States to go to Paris as his refuge, and Nina Simone doing the same thing as refuge for her, right? Nina suffered from abusive relationship, depression, etc. They both were navigating the systemic racism within the United States. And so by leaving this country, same as we see with Ella Baker, et cetera, there's a refuge for the Blacks, right? Yeah. In Paris. And we have this opportunity right now that where I was like, things don't have to be the same way anymore. Mm-hmm. What if I created a space where there was a sanctuary where James Baldwin and Nina Simone could have felt at home here and safe here and celebrated here. And so my motivation for creating Baldwin and Simone's was creating a space where Black travelers, brown travelers can find themselves reflected and feel a sense of peace, a sense of being at home, and a sense of safety. Safety is a conversation that happens a lot within Black and brown communities that isn't necessarily understood or known about outside of kind of like the more intimate conversations. Like they're conversations that happen in like friend groups or like small whatever, right?
Marginalized communities have that internal community.
Like all the safety is 100% like at the core of a lot of this.
Yeah,
we talked about today green books and Robert was talking about the LGBTQ, you know, what they've had in their space. They had something very similar. And I think it's a great concept. I can't wait to see how it shakes out. And
I guess I can announce here too. So
here first.
Love that.
So I am launching another version of Unpacking. As far as the name goes, a TV show. Nice. So I am beginning production for a show that is going to tell the story of traveling while Black. And so we'll go on to all these nuances of what that experience looks like, but then also highlighting Black-owned hotels and restaurants and attractions in the world for us to sit. So as you were saying, like Green Book and everything, like, I want to make sure that we're
highlighting. A travel show specifically for the Black, you know, as a Black traveler visiting Black-owned. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I want to
highlight, you know, like if you're in South America and like you're looking for a specific experience, or if you're in Europe, like, I want to make sure that we get a
document. Or if you're in Atlanta.
Where Baldwin and Simone's will be coming soon. Yes.
Portland. Portland. I mean, that's a place it can be anywhere.
Sure. Absolutely.
So one last question I want to bring up, because I know, like, since we're in diversity in our space, we're not very diverse. We're going to get travelers that are going to be like, well, are white people welcome at Baldwin and Simone?
It's just that who is it designed for, right? Mm-hmm. The world is designed for men. Right-handed people, able-bodied people, white people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Within Baldwin and Simone's, the intention around the design, remember in the workshop we were talking about white gaze?
Yeah.
And the white gaze is defined by creating something with the assumption that the user of that product or service is going to be from a European descent. The example that that is top of mind is Band-Aids.
Right.
Band-Aids in function cover a wound for everybody, but in form, it only matches one skin type.
Until recently.
It took the murder in a global the murder of George Floyd in a global uprising for that company to expand their product line to have more skin tones.
Wait a minute. I did not know. That's, I learned that. Wait a minute. Band-Aids changed? Because
now they have more options.
What? Okay, that's great. I didn't know that.
And like, when I think about designing with wounds of color in mind,
right,
I would have, as a designer, had a spectrum of options of skin tones for that product. And so it's that same concept of, okay, well, at this hotel experience, I am designing for folk that typically are not thought about, not prioritized, and not celebrated in the same ways as everybody else. And so I'm very excited to not only be the visionary for this creative process and the creation of it, but also to experience it myself, just like as a Black woman who will get to enjoy all of its perks.
Right.
Well, kudos to you. I mean, that's fantastic. That's amazing. I like that. Well, yeah. I mean, when's groundbreaking? What stage are you out with?
We're in scout stage of land. So we're looking for properties right now. And so I cannot give you launch times because it's under wraps.
Right.
But we do, I'm able to share that it will be launching in ATL, Atlanta.
Great market.
Nice. Awesome.
Atlanta.
Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Like it's been great. It's been great getting to know you. I feel a momentum's continuing. Yes. I don't think it's not snowballing yet. Right. But it's continuing, which is good. And I think it's positive. And look across the floor. The floor looks more diverse.
It did this year. No lie.
Than it did two years ago.
The last time we had a mirror. Yeah. It did. It was noticeable. It was noticeable for sure.
There's positive things happening. Yeah. And so shout out to you. Thank you so much for joining us on a live version of No BS Short Term Rental Podcast. We don't do these often, but when we are in market together, I would like to go ahead and do this. Episode 23.
Hey.
Hit subscribe, like,
watch all that shit.
Rewatch it again.
Share with your friend. Yeah. And until next time.
Find me.
Yeah.
For getting in contact with me, you can follow me at Christina X Will. It's at KristinaXWill. And also check us out at unpacking.co.
And we'll put all those links in the website as well. So thanks so much.
We'll have you back again. We'll have you back again. We're not going anywhere. Yeah. Big thanks.
All right. Till next time.
Later.